This is Interpreting Wine podcast founder and host Lawrence Francis welcoming you to my first ever deep dive into a single producer with Waterford Distillery of Ireland. This is the type of series I've been wanting to make ever since starting the podcast back in 2017, giving as it does unrivaled access for you, the listener, to all levels of the company, from strategy and history right the way through every single production detail. I think you'll agree Waterford are doing something very special, and I'd highly recommend subscribing to the podcast so that you're alerted whenever new episodes go live. Today's episode of the Waterford Distillery Special features Waterford head brewer Neil Conway. We hear Neil's origin story and how experience from previous roles have transferred into his role at Waterford. We take a deep dive into the fermentation process, focusing on the whole journey from seed to still. And he gives us an insight into the whiskey he's been tasting coming off the still. Enjoy.
I started here at Waterford Brewery, was at the time in 1998. It seems like a long, long time ago at this stage. So it was under the Diageo umbrella at the time here. So we brewed certain different ales back in 98. Served my time as a brewer for a number of years. And roughly 10, 12 years later, early 2010 to 12, I went to St. James Gate Brewery in Dublin, where they brew famous Guinness brand. So spent a few years there, furthering my education in brewing and the rest. And I left the brewing business in 2014. At the time, there was a downturn in sales in brewing in Ireland. So the industry was getting tighter. So I think I thought at that time was a time to change. Obviously, you have family to look after and you're looking at long-term objectives. So at that time, period of time, I changed industry and I went to the dairy industry and I took up a position as a shift manager with Glanbia. And the reason I'm telling you this because my 2 years I spent with Glanbia, not knowing at the time, it actually helped me in the position I am now as head brewer in the distillery because of the terroir concept. The dairy industry also looks at obviously it's dairy of cows who feed from the land and the grass, and that gave me a whole education on how grass-fed cows, how it has an impact on the different proteins within the milk in the milk industry. Not knowing it then would help me in this position. So back in mid-2016, a position came up here, and I've worked with a few of the guys here previously, and position came up as head brewer, and they gave me a call. Look, would you be interested in coming back as head brewer? You have over 15 years experience, and we think you'd be suitable for the job. Come and have a chat with Mark Rainier, see what you think. So I still remember the day I sat down with Mark, and I think I only spoke with him for 10, 15 minutes. And that 10, 15 minutes, yeah, I'm coming back into this game. Mark's insight into what he wanted and his vision into what he wanted to do was just, I was completely bought by it. It didn't matter. It's just, this guy knows what he wants to do and this guy is going to make a success out of his vision. Because I worked here before, made it easy as well because I knew the process, I knew the plant. The bit I didn't have was the distillation part, okay? But the whole terroir concept, the whole brewing side of it, obviously wasn't alien to me, so it was easy to make that switch. But his vision was he won me over, and it's the best decision I've made over two years now into this position, and every day is just completely different. Every farm that we get in and every farm, different farm I brew through the process has different layers of complexity to it, and then the end product at different tastes and flavors from the new mix spirit.
I'm really happy that you brought up the idea of terroir. You brought up the idea kind of the vision, of kind of where the brand is going and, Mark's vision that kind of drew you in. But really, what I'd ask you to do is kind of, from your perspective, you know, knowing that you're the head brewer here, and you know, definitely want to ask about, you know, some of those other experiences that you've had. You could just sort of, you know, from your point of view, you know, talk us through, I guess, the process of whiskey production, you know, from kind of from the seed almost, you know, from the ground right the way through here. I just think that, you know, your perspective is, you know, is going to be really, you know, unique, and I think it's going to really bring something to the listener and bring something to me as well.
As a brewer, what I wouldn't have been used to before was the contact you would have with the farmer, the people who grow the barley. Previously in this industry, I would have just been used to getting a batch of barley delivered with a specification. Never really knew where it came from or the origins of the barley and how important it was where it came from. That barley just would have been brought through the process, and you try and get the best yields possible out of the barley, which is fine, but the knowledge of where it came from was missing from, and that's the piece that's different for me now. So it's the whole engagement with the farmer is a new addition to my role. It's probably 50% of my job now. So understanding the issues the farmer has from day to day during the harvest season, why he's having maybe higher proteins at the end of harvest. Because we have an agronomist here, you were talking to Grace earlier on, her understanding of how the farmer grows the grain during the harvest season is also an addition. So I can confer with her, look, what difficulties is he having out there? When I get the specification from the grain now, I fully understand the specifications that are coming into me with the high proteins, the obviously the friability and the fermentability of the grain, and how those results have come to light. It's not just a raw material with a cert of analysis. Now I understand why that the results are like they are. And it is basing it back down to the soil, how it was grown, maybe if it's conventional farming, the nitrogen application, and that full understanding. And also, as we take in different batches from different farms, there's a person behind that. There's a farmer. We're starting to get to know these guys individually as well via communications we have with them. Plus, we obviously invite them in when we brew and distill their grain. But it's that engagement, okay? So when that grain comes into me in the process, then obviously I have different farms. So that adds a complication to me because it's not standard barley every time. Every farm is different. So we bring in a 75 ton of malted barley. So it comes from the farm into the malt house and then it's delivered to us in 75 ton batches. We bring 8 brews then through the process. So it's 8 different brews for one farm. 8, 9.5 ton brews. I've really only the first, maybe the second brew to get that farm right, to get the parameters in the brew house right. We look at the gelatinization temperature, and that's what the gelatinization temperature is the ability of your temperature at a certain stand to break down those enzymes into sugars, okay? If a farm has a poor year, poor growing year, that gelatinization temperature is impacted. So you may have to rise your temperature to break down those enzymes. You may have to lower the temperature. So it's that understanding. Because we finish each farm after 8 brews, another farm is delivered in with completely different specifications. You have to start the process game. You need to adjust your mill gap, adjust your stand temperatures. Your yeast addition may alter slightly, not too much. But these are the things you look at, and that's weekly. You're more hands-on in the brew house as a brewer, as the head brewer. Obviously, the distillers and brewers who are running the plant daily are there every day and every minute. But as a head brewer, I have to be close to it, particularly on the first few brews. As the brews go through the process, then you're keeping an eye on the fermentation, making sure you're getting as much alcohol as you can out of the grain. So we look for approximately 400 to 420 litres of alcohol for every tonne of grain we take in. If we were yield driven, that's what I'd be really focusing in on, getting as much alcohol as I can out of the grain. Now, as a brewer, I still want that, but the main focus for me is the flavours. When that wash has finished fermenting, and it hits the distillation process that the flavours are in there. And if you don't get it right in the brew house, you just won't get those flavours at distillation. So that's what we look at every day. We're looking at every farm singly through the process and making sure all steps and procedures are followed.
Yeah, that's the thing that I pick up on so much, is that, you know, there is that traceability really of, you know, of what's coming through, and in terms of those different batches coming through, and that, you know, each farm, you know, really kind of, I guess, being allowed to express itself right the way through the process. But I think there is a, you know, a part of the process I'd like to get you to focus on, which, you know, is your bag really, you know, is the brewing process, and just ask you about it in three steps essentially. So, you know, what is the sort of ideal? What are you kind of looking for, you know, coming in? I mean, I've heard a lot about the protein levels and, you know, other sort of parameters. So, you know, what is sort of the ideal for you coming in? A bit more about, you know, what's actually happening in terms of the process here, and, you know, what is a good, I guess, brew? What does that look like for you? And then also then, yeah, as we're part of a process here, and that the output is then going on to be distilled, what is a sort of the distiller almost looking for you, and thinking about that sort of like a baton in a relay race? What are you passing on? What sort of handover are they looking for?
Right, so when we take in one farm, 75 ton of grain, what am I looking for? Looking for protein levels of around 9.5%, okay? That the main reason we look for the lower proteins is more starch available to break down to simple sugars for the fermentation process, but also because our limiting factor in the brewers is our mash filter. We have a mash filter that's a bit unique for the distilling industry. So the viscosity of the mash coming out has to be right for it to flow through the mash filter. Okay, so that's I suppose, an issue we may have. If we don't get the viscosity of the mash right, it won't go filter correctly. So I'm looking for lower proteins. All right, if we have higher proteins, I may need to adjust the mash bill, maybe a few higher stand temperatures. I'm looking at gravities of around 1065 off each brew. Okay, that ensures I have enough sugar within the wort to turn into alcohol during the fermentation process. All right, so the gravity is the sugar you get in the wort. So wort is the liquid that comes off of the brewing process after you mill and mash and you convert your starches into sugars. You have a sugary wort. Okay, you test the gravity of that. So that's the gravity of water is one, and the gravity now of this beer, which is your sugar content, is we look for about 1065. So when we pitch yeast to that wort, then you're converting those sugars into alcohol. So yeast feeds on those sugars. So the enzymes during your mash conversion are broken down. Your small long chain alpha and beta amylase are broken down into sugars. And you pitch your yeast, and your yeast then ferments those sugars into alcohols. After the fermentation process, you're looking for an alcohol content of in around 8 to 8.5% alcohol to feed your distillation process. So you bring that alcohol percentage then up to the 70% after the second distillation. Now, during the fermentation process, we ferment for about 120 hours, which may seem a bit longer than your standard fermentation. We promote a secondary fermentation. So we ferment our gravity from 1065 down to water after about 60, 70 hours. But then we leave it another 50 hours for secondary fermentation, where it's promoting your lactic fermentation. So it's an additional pH drop. Your lactic fermentation promotes a more fruity and floral flavor to your wash before it's sent to the distillation. So that's what I'm looking for through the brew. It's a standard 1065 gravity. A wort that ferments to about 8 to 8.5% ABV, and that's what I try to keep that standard for every farm we come in here. Okay, so that's where every farm that comes in, you're adjusting your process to hit those parameters. We brew and distill farms separately, so the main question I would be asked is how do you ensure the traceability of one farm through the process and keep it separate from all the other farms? So just to give you a sense of what we do here. We take in one farm, 75 ton, we store it separately in its own grain silo. So every farm has its own silo. We have three silos. So one farm stored in one silo, and then we have another farm behind it, another farm behind it. We brew individually, so we use one farm, the 75 ton, bring it through the brew house in 8 different brews, so 8 by 9.5 ton brews. That takes roughly a week to brew one farm. We have 4 fermentation vessels, each with a capacity of 85,000 litres. So we fill those 4 fermenters with, so 75 ton of malted barley equates to 4 full washbacks, each with 85,000 litres of wash. Those are fermented over 5 days. Obviously, they're staggered to keep production going. So the first pair of brews are fermented first, and then 2 days later, we'll do another pair of brews, and they're fermenting 2 days later. When we distill, then we take charges from the washbacks, send 17,000 litres at a time from the washbacks up to the stills, and we do it a double distillation. Again, all done separately. We have the traceability and evidence on our track and trace system here to prove that we keep it separate. So once one farm is brewed and distilled, we clean down the whole process. We clean the brew house, we clean the washbacks and all the pipework from the washbacks to the stills. And then we start our next farm. So there's full traceability from farm to farm in regards to segregating each farm.
Okay, yeah, you make it sound so simple.
Yeah, it is really simple. Yeah, and look, and we have procedures in the background, Lawrence, that the distiller on shift, once he's finished the farm, he knows what to do. They do a full clean down of the, obviously you have the dry side of the process of your grain handling, your grain intake into your hopper in the brew house, and then everything else is chemically cleaned from your tanks to your pipework between the brew house and fermentation vessels. When we go on the tour later on, you'll see how automated the plant is. Like, it sounds like a lot of cleaning. Jeez, that's a lot of cleaning over after from one farm to the other. But it's not. The plant is highly automated. We have a cleaning in place system that obviously has chemicals used. That really, there's programs built into the background that the guy, the distiller, can select a certain programs to clean the process. So it's not really a hands-on clean. We let our system do the cleaning. Just build a program in the background. Software engineer builds a program. Distiller then all he has to do is remember that this part of the plant needs to be cleaned. Select the program, press start, and the process looks after itself.
I think something really interesting that, you know, I'm discovering and seeing here is that essentially all of the different suppliers, all the different farms, you know, all of the different barleys that are being grown right the way through the process, when they get into essentially Waterford's distillery's hands, they're all treated in the same way. So that you know, my read of that is that the variation batch to batch can directly be drawn back to the grower, can be directly, you know, as far back as you want to take it back into the soil, into the seed variety, etc., etc. Give us a sense of then how did you get to the process here for in terms of the brewing? You know, what were maybe some of the decisions that you took along the way, and you know, what were maybe some of the things that you tried out perhaps and went by the wayside, and you know, what were some of the forces that led you to the process that you've settled on now?
Okay. Right, to answer your question, you need to, I suppose, go to the end to start. So at the end of the day, we want to ensure that the flavour comes from the barley and where it's grown. You always go back to the barley, right? The different flavours from the different sites. So when we run our distillation process, we ensure that we don't drive out those flavours. And it's the same at the brew house and the same with fermentation. You don't want to lose the flavours that you're extracting from each of those different barley sources. So we had to look at a couple of things at the very start. So obviously Mark purchased this site from Diageo, which was at the time a working brewery where they brewed an extract Guinness, okay? So the process or the plant that he purchased, he was going to use in the production of Waterford whiskey, okay? So we couldn't change the plant. The plant was there, so we had to work around what was in front of us. So we had a working brew house. If you were building a distillery from scratch, you possibly wouldn't go with the equipment that's there. Okay, so you build your mash profile, your distillation around the equipment you have. So the plant that you see across the way here was already existing. So we had to build our process around that plant. That's where the model of the 75 ton comes from, because that's what we can take in. That's the limiting factor of how of the process. So our brew house can only handle an X amount of quantity per brewer, right? You have to look at what the capabilities are of your brew house then. How it's a single malt we're doing, as you know. So will the mill work? So what can the mill do for us, right? So you determine your mill gap or your settings for the mill. Your mash filter is a limiting factor because it can only operate under certain circumstances. So you have to look at the proteins and the different other specifications of the grain. Fermentation versus fermentation is just fermenting wort to an alcohol. So that's fine. It's only four conical vessels. But if you're building a distillery, you may go for wood fermentation vessels. You may go for open fermentation vessels. So you have to look at what you have. And that's what we did at the very start. But as I said, you have to look at your end goal and what sort of style, new mix spirit do you want from your stills. So then you go back to the brewers. You look for a standard gravity wort. Okay, so you operate your brew house to ensure you get a standard gravity wort, breaking down those starches into sugars. Okay, so you standardize that. Then you go to fermentation. Yes, your yeast can alter the flavors and tastes of your finished distillate. So we keep it to a standard distiller's yeast. Maybe a few years down the line, we'll look at playing with different yeasts. Maybe propagating our own yeast, and different yeast will give us different flavors. But we don't want to impact the flavor just yet. We want to let the barley do the work. So we standardize our fermentation. We get to distillation then. So I'm sending a finished wash at 8.5% ABV to the distillation process. Yes, we can alter the flavors here of the barley by over distilling the wash. So we purposely distill very, very slow. Now we double distill here using our X Inverleven stills, but we purposely Ned'll explain a bit more to you later on, but we like to use the term low and slow, right? So you distill very, very slowly, ensuring that you capture all the different flavors from each of the different farms. If we could run those stills two, if not three times faster than we could, but that would maybe destroy some of the flavors that we want to capture within the new make spirit. All right, so that's what you look at. You look at what you have, you look at your raw material, and at the end game, you want to capture those individual flavors from each of the farms.
Fascinating for me to go through this and to look at the process here, I think, and really think about all of the, I guess, the hidden processes that have got to still take place. And it got to be done right, and I've got to be running almost in the background to let the barley and to let the terroir be the star of the show, really, to come out there. So I think it's super interesting for me to hear about this and to be able to share this. I would just like to ask you about I guess the reason that we're all here, which is the final whiskey, and in your own words, talk to us about what are you tasting now. You're in the privileged position of being able to taste some of this, and then looking ahead to when are these whiskies going to be coming out onto the market.
Okay, I have the privilege of tasting the new make spirit every day from the still. As I said, Ned Gann, our head distiller, will go into more detail. He has a better job than I have. He gets to taste the maturing whiskey nearly every day, and he's putting blends together. But for myself, and I'm speaking for the distillers on shift as well, who are working here every day and I see the different farms coming in, they themselves can taste the differences every day when they're making the cuts at the still. These guys are getting to the stage where when they hear a farm's name, oh, that's the guy we had last year, flavors from this farm, brilliant. So they all are starting to get their own favourite styles of flavor, if that's coming from the barley. So they're looking out for the different farms every year. So that will just tell you that the flavors at the new, from the new make spirit at the still, there's people have different preferences. So now when it goes, obviously, from the still, it goes into your cask to mature. Ned draws off samples every second week and brings them back to Waterford Distillery here, and we go through different tastings, see how different farms are maturing, and it's actually the fun part of it. And it's mind blowing. Ned will tell you that what Mark is looking for, a mind fuck of a whiskey, and that's what we get every day. It's unreal, and it's a privilege to be part of it, and exciting as well. And especially as we go on, a lot of the younger spirits taste very good. So what are they going to taste like after 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years? They're going to be brilliant. They're magnificent, that's all I have to say, magnificent.
Thank you, Neil. A super interesting deep dive into the fermentation process. And I'm loving how the handoff from Grace to yourself is really taking us inside how things work at Waterford. The next episode, episode 377, features the handoff to head distiller at Waterford, Ned Gahan, who, as Neil said, probably has the best job at Waterford. Do, of course, check out below for Waterford's website and main social media handles, where you can check on their progress. If you're loving the series so far, it would also be great if you could subscribe wherever you're listening. And of course, I would love to have you following along with me on social media, where I'm at Interpreting Wine on Instagram and Facebook, at Wine Podcast on Twitter, and email hello@interpretingwine.com. See you next time.